Trump or Biden? Who is better at foreign policy? This is Brief Before Impact. Hey, welcome everyone. I am Matt Parker. Thanks for joining me. Today's episode, we're going to go through the victories and downfalls of President Trump's foreign policy agendas during his 4 years as president and look at the year and a half, a little more than that, of President Biden and some of the wins or losses he's had in the foreign policy arena. But before we do, I wanted to jump in with a quick news update. According to Epoch Times, the United States Navy sends two warships through the Taiwan Strait. This is the first since Nancy Pelosi's visit. So August 28th was whenever these warships sailed through the Taiwan Strait. And this, again, is the first time since the Chinese regime ramped up military pressure on the self-ruled island in retaliation to Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan earlier this month. Just want to give you a quick update before we jump into tonight's article. Let me do a quick ad break, and then we will get to work. All right, welcome back, everyone. So just one more comment on the two warships sent through the Taiwan Strait. This is totally necessary, but more importantly, it's very routine that one military and other military naval vessels transit the Taiwan Strait. In case you weren't familiar with the Taiwan Strait, like where that is, it's between the mainland China, its border, and the island of Taiwan. I think approximately 80 miles, if I remember correctly, between the two countries. And this is really a signal from the United States Navy and kind of a retaliation to Chinese amping up the tensions after Nancy Pelosi visited the island of Taiwan. They're just reminding China, basically, hey, we're here. We still have the right to go through this part of the water. Because according to a statement made from the 7th Fleet, that the 7th Fleet is the fleet that essentially owns these two naval warships. The 7th Fleet made a statement saying that the U.S. vessels transited through a corridor in the strait that is beyond the territorial sea of any coastal state, meaning that no one owns these waters. These are, in fact, international waters. So just want to point that out. I think in a quick opinion piece here that that's a good move by the Navy. They should do that and remind China that, in fact, America will not be bossed around. And certainly our politicians have a right to travel to wherever they want to. Anyways, let's move into today's episode. I wanted to outline basically President Trump's versus President Biden's foreign policy, not just their the wins and losses, but kind of their approach in case you weren't aware or really had thought a lot into what are the differences between your mainstream Republican versus your mainstream Democrat when it comes to foreign policy. Naturally, in every country, domestic political issues tend to drive the narrative and tend to drive what most people focus on, which makes total sense. You know, whether it's super high inflation, creating extraordinary high gas prices, food prices. We're looking at the fallout of COVID, restrictions that came from those lockdowns and openings and so forth. All these are kind of domestic issues. That's really what's on the minds of most people whenever they go to vote. However, today I wanted to outline the differences between some of these policies and how they affect just American citizens. It's not really what I think. This is just my opinion. Typically what Americans vote on when they actually go to strike a ballot for the Democrat or the Republican. But they do matter in my view. So I wanted to outline just kind of the differences between these two. And we'll do so quickly. I'm just going to break it this whole episode down for talking about Trump, what he did for foreign policy in a very short summation, that is. Biden up to this point in his presidency, what he's accomplished. And then we're going to break down some actual percentages on how Americans, you and I, are polled on what we view for the most important foreign policy issues are for our country and how mainstream Republicans and Democrats operate on those different issues. So let me just start off with President Trump. We're going to do kind of a quick breakdown of what he did well in terms of foreign policy. And this isn't everything, but these are just some high points. Keep that in mind. Let me first start off with his policy to China. And most importantly, on technology. We certainly heard Trump rail on about trade on and on, and I'll talk about some of the trade wins that he had. But I think this is something that Trump got right, very much so. When his administration was quoted saying the Chinese 5G is not okay. It's dangerous to U.S. national security, dangerous for allies as well. And this is according to Ian Bremmer, president of Eurasia Group. And this is probably the most significant success, and by the way, one that the Biden administration is completely aligned with, that in fact, the United States and our allies need to push back against the expansion of Chinese technology. You've heard me rail about this before, won't dive into it today, but in many respects, Chinese companies are an extension of the Chinese Communist Party. Therefore, having their technological capabilities embedded in Western democracies and our infrastructures and our countries, this is dangerous. I think President Trump nailed this right on the head. Let me move on to, secondly, to the Abraham Accords. What this achieved was really the normalization of Israel diplomatic relations with a series of Arab states. For example, the UAE, Bahrain, Morocco, Sudan, and other countries all moved towards normalization. This is a big deal to accomplish such a kind of a peace arrangement in the Middle East. And what its focus was around was, in fact, Iran. Now, this is different from previous administrations, particularly Democratic administrations. Let me highlight what I mean in terms of the differences in approach. Again, radically different from what other presidents would have done. Previous administrations, I'll even highlight a quote here from Secretary of State John Kerry. He said, quote, "Unless you do Israel-Palestinian peace, you will never get any peace between Israel and other states," end quote. So that's actually the Palestinian issue is becoming less important than the Iran issue, much more so. And this is what I think Trump did very well. He recognized the fact that Iran and its growth and its and its aggressive actions were the main concerns of most of the countries in the Middle Eastern region, far more important than the Palestinian issue and whatever issues the Palestinians have with the country of Israel. So this is a good win for President Trump. Pivoting over to trade, we kind of briefly mentioned it earlier, there's two big trade deals that really came out of his administration. Between ourselves, the United States, and South Korea, which really allowed a lot of flexibility between the trade between our two countries. And additionally, if you remember the trade deal NAFTA, it got renamed and repurposed under USMCA. And this was between ourselves, Mexico, and Canada, which are our main trading partners. And this was really, this deal was quite less, very smaller, even less controversial than the Trans-Pacific Partnership that Obama couldn't get done. And then as soon as Trump entered office, he killed it. So there were some big wins for trade under the Trump administration. Pivoting over to counterterrorism, if you remember in that 2016 election, the kind of campaign, Trump was going hard after what he would do to ISIS and destroying it. And there's no question that the Islamic State came to an end as a territorial unit with local governance following an aggressive and effective Trump campaign to incapacitate the organization and weaken its threat to the U.S. and its allies. If you recall, the killing of the former ISIS head, his name is al-Baghdadi. This is a big symbolic win under the Trump administration. So counterterrorism, certainly Trump administration had some very big victories there. A couple more wins for Trump's administration. You look at Mexico immigration. Certainly talking about the wall they was going to build, et cetera. That was a huge talking point in his campaign. And the reality is he got much tighter security on Mexico's southern border. I recall within 6 months, border flows in the United States were down over 50%. That's actually a pretty big deal. We can debate whether you're open borders, you're closed borders, pro-immigration, et cetera. But this is something he campaigned on and got done in a very big way. Lastly, there were some alliances that were strengthened during the time of Trump's administration. A couple of countries off the top, Brazil, India, Israel, and including some Gulf Arab states, obviously through the Abraham Accords. So there were a number of countries that we bolstered our relationships with. Very much, this was something about Trump's personality vis-a-vis the personalities of the leaders of those countries, Bolsonaro in Brazil, for example, or Modi in India. I think it was had to do much more with the personalities and that kind of personal relationship that really enhanced those alliances between the United States and those countries. And additionally, I'll talk about, you know, kind of the cost sharing of NATO. You know, Trump hammered NATO a lot. He was pushing for it to basically, what is your purpose? What are you doing with yourself anymore? And he was upset, I think rightfully so, that the United States was carrying financially the load on what NATO was doing. And he pushed that NATO countries started paying more, which they slowly did, a few at least. And of course, as we know now, the Russian invasion of Ukraine has just, those countries in NATO alliance have made a 180, many or a few of them at least, in terms of their determination to strengthen their own defenses against an aggressive Russia. So overall, President Trump, those are just some wins that the President Trump had. In my view, my opinion, Trump's foreign policy was the best aspect of his presidency. Like, meaning, this is where I think he did the best on behalf of the United States. It wasn't, for example, wasn't social policy or, you know, healthcare issues or, I don't know, entitlement reform. No, none of that. None of that. That really wasn't his bread and butter. However, his foreign policy had really good victories. So this is what I think was really his best part of his whole administration. Let's take that now and all the things that he accomplished, and let's talk about so far what President Biden has done or what is attempted to do. It's not an apples comparison, meaning that, you know, Trump had his entire 4 years of that presidency. Now we're looking at Biden's we're at the end of August of 2022. So we're not even in a full 2 years. But I just wanted to highlight a couple of things that Biden has accomplished so far and is still working on as we speak. Read you some data here. This is according to John Curtis. He's writing for the House of Commons Library. If you look back at just a couple of weeks after Biden assumed office, he visited the State Department and he told them, quote, America is back. Diplomacy is back at the center of our foreign policy. We will repair our alliances and engage with the world once again, not to meet yesterday's challenges, but today's and tomorrow's. And he goes on about America's leadership. And this was kind of one of the biggest criticisms of Trump and his America First policy was that it was, in fact, very kind of self-absorbed, not multilateral, though that actually wasn't the case in many regards. But again, it's all a lot about politics. It's about messaging. So Biden came in saying, I am the opposite of Trump. I am much more about gathering consensus, working with our allies, focusing on diplomacy as our kind of the linchpin of our foreign policy abroad. So a few of the promises that he's so far delivered on, let me highlight here. President Biden started the process of rejoining the Paris Climate Agreement. The reason he's rejoining, because Trump kicked us out of it. He's rejoining the agreement in the first day of his office, although he has reinvigorated U.S. diplomatic leadership on tackling climate change. Implementing legislation to cut greenhouse gas emissions has proven more difficult. Mr. Biden did extend the U.S.-Russia New START nuclear arms control treaty, as he promised. And he also followed through on hosting the Global Summit for Democracy, although there were criticisms over which countries were invited. So early on, overall, Biden has focused on the principles of democracy and pushing for human rights and kind of more of those staples, I guess, of traditional American, foreign policy from a narrative perspective. I think trying to take more of a role from controlling the conversation when it comes to foreign policy abroad versus I want to get X, Y, and Z done. It's not exactly that because, again, we're early into his presidency, so it's not exactly fair to say, well, he hasn't done enough. We're still early on. But let me highlight what he's still working on. And has already done to a degree. President Biden did promise during his campaign to end the forever wars in the Middle East, as you all, I'm sure, recall, summer 2021. He did remove the U.S. troops from Afghanistan, the way in which was executed, and it was very heavily criticized at that time. However, U.S. combat mission in Iraq was ended in December 2021, but 2,500 troops remained to help advise Iraqi forces, though they are also providing help with airstrikes against the remnants of the Islamic State. So that's essentially what he's done about counterterrorism. We're not going to go into what we've already talked about, Afghanistan and the debacle that was. Certainly a black eye on Biden's administration and the United States as a whole for decades to come, to say the least. But these are, he did campaign. He's going to end those wars. He did those. Not well, but he did in fact end those wars. On trade, President Biden's actually maintained President Trump's strong line on China. He has eased some of the trade restrictions placed on America's allies like the European Union and Japan, though. And this is kind of reflective of the Biden administration placing a greater emphasis on multilateralism and recommitted to its efforts to engage with the NATO alliance and the G7. The slow pace of his appointments to key ambassadorial posts, like in London, for example, that's come under criticism, despite all his talk for multilateralism. Placing appointments for ambassadors, and particularly in countries like the UK, that's kind of a big deal. Wrapping up a couple here that he's still working on, is President Biden promised to rejoin the Iran nuclear deal. Negotiations with Iran, which stopped complying with parts of the agreement after President Trump reimposed sanctions on the country, are ongoing. Those negotiations are ongoing, but have so far not delivered a major breakthrough. If all sides fail to agree a deal, then the U.S. may soon be forced to find other ways to prevent Iran from acquiring irreversible nuclear knowledge that renders the agreement meaningless. So that's kind of a basic overview of what Biden administration is still working on. And there's really no quite conclusion I can draw on how effective either one of these couple of points will be. A couple of additional things I think we can point directly to that have been, in a way, failures is obviously the first one, Russian invasion of Ukraine. We talked about this at length in other episodes, but a short kind of summation here. In my view, this is Matthew's opinion. When there's a lack of clarity by American leadership on what we will do if X happens or if this line is crossed, and we don't follow up on that, this is how countries like Ukraine get invaded. That's where I stand on this. Countries act based upon their interests of security. And whenever they feel that security can be enhanced or it's even being threatened, they will act in aggressive ways. And whenever America doesn't make quite clear to our adversaries, like, this will happen if you do XYZ, then sadly countries like Ukraine will get invaded. Additional to that, just moving into a different part of the world, looking at the increased tension between China and Taiwan, I think that based upon the invasion of Ukraine by Russia, the Biden administration is saying we have to get ahead of this China and Taiwan issue and not drag our feet like we were with Ukraine. It's yet to be determined if that's actually going to come to complete fruition, and we are going to get ahead of it, preventing an invasion by China into Taiwan. However, based on a few things that we're making, including continued military engagement with our allies in that region, supplying military weapons both to Taiwan and other countries, and obviously diplomatic relations, it appears that the Biden administration is trying to get ahead of this and deter a Chinese invasion. Not that it's alone on America's shoulders to deter that war. It's more importantly the regional actors like Australia, for example, and other countries that have, in Japan, South Korea, that have more of a kind of stake in the game. But this is an important piece. And if, in fact, America, whether it's a Biden administration or otherwise, doesn't kind of show up to that, you know, show up to this engagement and drag its feet like it did in Ukraine, we could see Taiwan being invaded, something the Chinese certainly have articulated they want to do, or I should say they just want to retake the island and reabsorb it into the mainland. So this is we don't know how it's going to play out yet. I will, you know, tip my hat to the recent killing of the leader of Al-Qaeda. His name was al-Zawahiri. I did a whole radio show talk about this recently. And if you remember, after Bin Laden was killed, Zawahiri was essentially ran Al-Qaeda. He was one of the, him and Bin Laden were like the two brains behind the 9/11 attacks. And it was just several weeks ago, actually, that Zawahiri was killed by a drone attack via a missile by the United States in Kabul, Afghanistan. So that's certainly a tremendous victory on behalf of not just the United States, but other countries that have been targeted by radical Islamic terrorism in the past as well. And additionally, something that has been, I guess, produced some good from the invasion of Ukraine. Obviously, a lot of these countries in Eastern Europe have started to say, okay, we have to get prepared, in fact, if Russia invades us. So recently, the U.S. Senate overwhelmingly voted to approve a resolution ratifying the membership of Finland and Sweden into NATO. This isn't so much like, oh, this is a win for Biden. However, there's a lot of deal making that goes on into these kind of resolutions and ensuring that as many senators are on board as possible, because in fact, it is the White House that is in charge of America's foreign policy. I would say this is a win for the Biden administration. More importantly, just a win for the NATO alliance. If you do in view, like myself, that Finland and Sweden are making the right call by adding or joining the alliance. So overall, though it's still early into his administration, Biden has done a couple of good things. Certainly has some black eyes, you know, thinking of Afghanistan probably being, Afghanistan, the withdrawal of Afghanistan and the invasion of Ukraine are both pretty egregious. Though I would say Afghanistan is laid squarely at the feet of Biden. The Russian invasion of Ukraine, that's not entirely all his fault. However, he does hold a lot of the blame to that because of the lack of clarity that he was providing in the months prior to that invasion. So we talked about Trump, talked about Biden. Let's pivot here and kind of close out with the last theme of the evening, of just how, in fact, Republicans and Democrats vary on foreign policy. And so I'm going to go through some data these are polled Americans, highlighted by a Washington Post article by Dan Balz and Scott Clement, talking about how Republicans and Democrats view different issues, different interests, really, that are affecting the United States. And hopefully, by going through this, you really go, okay, Democrats and Republicans are aligned in many issues when it comes to foreign policy. However, there's some stark differences. And this is just an informative theme that we're talking about tonight. So, according to the article, among the most significant differences between the two parties are on perceptions of American exceptionalism. For years, a higher percentage of Republicans have said that the United States has a unique character that makes it the greatest country in the world. But the gap has widened dramatically since Trump was elected. In 2012, 85% of Republicans, 66% of Democrats said the United States was the greatest nation. Today, 80% of Republicans still say that, but among Democrats, it has fallen to 35%, down 21 percentage points since 2017, Trump's first year in office. So more than 3 in 5 Democrats, you know, now say the United States is no greater than other nations or other countries. An assessment of future threats to U.S. vital interest and therefore the policy priorities also highlights the deep differences between Republicans and Democrats. Not one of the top 5 threats identified by Democrats make the top 5 identified by Republicans. Democrats see threats both internally and externally, while Republicans see the threats mostly coming from outside the U.S. borders. So, for the Democrats, the 5 leading threats to the U.S. vital interest are, and this is in order, the COVID-19 pandemic, climate change, racial inequality in the United States, foreign interference in U.S. elections, and economic inequality in this country. Let's take a look at the Republicans. The top 5 threats to vital U.S. interest are the development of China as world power, international terrorism, large number of immigrants and refugees coming into the country, domestic violent extremism, and Iran's nuclear program. So despite the differences of opinion between members of the two major parties, support for security alliances is at or near an all-time high, according to this survey. And this includes accepting decisions that are not necessarily the preferred approach by the United States. So most Americans see the transatlantic alliances as mutually beneficial to the United States and European allies and remained committed to NATO. Trump, you know, certainly challenged that at times and questioned during his presidency. But Democratic support is much higher than Republican support, 85% versus 65%. And I think when we just look at those five leading threats for both parties, I think this reflects the prism through how most people look at life. And then naturally they tend towards one political party or the other based upon that prism. The survey was looking at threats to vital interest to the United States. That first you have to classify what is a vital interest in America. And the opinion even varies there. Because if the opinion of the interests vary, then naturally the threats to that interest are going to vary. So this is why you'll see discrepancies between these two outlooks. But it really reflects, in my view, just how Republicans and Democrats, in the most simplest sense, look at the world, look at their own lives, and just look at how they operate within it and operate in their communities and so forth. And that extends all the way out to their viewpoints on threats to America's vital interest. I thought this was the last piece was rather revealing and highlights. It was just talking about China. It was talking about how the Republicans and Democrats approach the issue of China. And I think this kind of draws a good summation of how Republicans approach it versus Democrats. And this is back to the article. A quote, Republicans favor a nationalist foreign policy that hinges on self-reliance and autonomy and that promotes the use of more direct, forceful means to achieve U.S. goals. And this is according to the council report. This means including maintaining superior military power, economic pressure, independence in decision-making, and more confrontational approach towards China. This is all the point. This part of the article is all geared towards China. Now, you compare this. Democrats and majorities of Republicans, they favor putting sanction on Chinese officials responsible for human rights abuses, stopping U.S. companies from selling sensitive technology equipment to China, and seeking to negotiate arms control agreements between the two countries. So if we're looking at this article and just the polling data, both Republicans and Democrats, when it comes to China, both see it as a threat. Okay. The question is, how do they approach that threat? How is it most effectively going to be changed for the better outcome for the United States? And this is just where they vary. And I think, again, it comes down to why you see a Democrat or a liberal, a Republican or a conservative. I'm using these words for a reason, liberal and conservative, because this is how we give these descriptions, because it's really how people view the world. Conservative, more conservative person, not looking for change, looking for more self-reliance and autonomy. Liberal, more progressive, looking for something, a new approach to something, constantly adapting to new ideas or thinking about new ideas and bringing them into political debate. The fact that there are conservatives and liberals in the United States approaching life differently, just day to day here in the country, that naturally makes sense. They would extend that viewpoint outwards towards how America operates and engages around the world, especially when it comes to what is viewed as a threat. I mean, China is just, you know, one thing we're looking at as a data point, really, but it reflects how a Republican versus a Democrat would approach the problem. Independent, self-reliant, that's the Republican way. Democrats, much more of a consensus builder, multilateral institutions to build a coalition against a threat. So these are just the differences overall. And I think the China issue, since you hear me talk about it enough, is one data point that we can look at and go, okay, now I understand how foreign policy extends really from our own viewpoints on ourselves, our communities, our political discussions here domestically in the United States, and then naturally to extend outward. This is how the United States operates and how it's viewed in the world. So we covered Trump and Biden, how they have done so far in their administrations when it comes to foreign policy, highlighting the differences here between the Democrats and Republicans. And that just kind of closes out on this episode. At the end of the day, it seems to me that Democrats sometimes do foreign policy right. Republicans sometimes do foreign policy right. They definitely both get it wrong at times. And this is important to note, because when it comes down to how we vote, who we look at to leading our national security apparatus, making those decisions, I am always of the bias and will always be of how does America win? Because I want anyone of Americans who are listening to be set up for success in any way that is. This podcast is all about the geopolitical effects or geopolitical events and how they affect our lives. Therefore, I want to ensure that the policies and the agenda is setting up Americans for success, helping us win, helping us be secure over the long term, and continuing our prosperity and our way of life moving forward. So thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoy kind of learning about the differences between the American Republican, American Democratic parties, how they view foreign policy, and certainly looking at Trump and Biden and their differences and how they are alike when it comes to foreign policy. As always, I hope you are picking up what I'm putting down. I am Matt Parker, and this is Brief Before Impact.